Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, August the 13th. And another exciting day of politics here in North America. Well, what can I tell you? I think everybody's talking about this Epstein story. We did a small chat last night, Monday night, with our friend Bruce, author, and a guy that I always value because his opinions on many of these criminal activities are so interesting. And I'm going to recommend that you check it out. It's the podcast underneath this one. I just want you to hear what Bruce has to say and what he thinks about this whole Epstein story. I personally, you know, I don't know what happened. It's at least the official position appears to be, or will be, that I guess he committed suicide. That's apparently going to be the official position. We'll see. It is very difficult for me to believe that a prisoner of this importance would not have been supervised, but we're going to learn more, I'm sure, over the next few days. I do say this. I believe that Attorney General Barr is the kind of serious person who will get to the bottom of this, and I trust him 100%. So let's see where we go from here. Well, I have a post over at the American Thinker on Tuesday morning. Maybe you had a chance to see it, where I talk a little bit about the election of 2020. And what I believe is starting to be a similarity with the election of 1972. Just to give you a little memory for those of you who may not remember, in 1972, President Nixon was reelected. He defeated Senator McGovern, and he was reelected in one of the largest reelection landslides, frankly, of quite some time. He won 49 states, only Massachusetts voted for George McGovern. He got something like 61-62% of the popular vote. I mean, those are not the kind of numbers that you see in an American election. I mean, usually landslides in American elections are, you know, anywhere from 55-60%. But we just have not had that many presidents crack the 60% number. It's a very difficult number to crack, particularly when you're talking about millions and millions of voters, but he did it. And he did it because of the way the Democrats looked at the election. You know, a year and a half before the election of 1972, Richard Nixon was seen by most people as an effective president in the sense that he was getting things done. He was clearly pulling the United States out of Vietnam, which was the emotional issue. And he was doing other things that were interesting, but it was the Vietnam War that was dominating everything in 1971. And because of that, and because of the fact that Richard Nixon was only elected by 43% of the popular vote in 1968, I mean, he was a plurality president, not a majority president. Because of that, he was very vulnerable, and he was very beatable. In fact, at this moment in the summer of 1971, most of the polls had it within the margin of error, but there were some polls indicating that Democrats could beat Richard Nixon. He clearly was not a cinch for reelection. I mean, there was no expectation that he would be reelected, let alone be reelected by a huge margin. So what happened? The Democrats were running against the Vietnam War. The irony here, of course, is they were the ones who started the war. The war was actually started by Lyndon Johnson, President Lyndon Johnson. He was the one who escalated the Vietnam War to the point of having 500,000 men in Vietnam. President Nixon, once he came in, started what he called the Vietnamization program, where gradually American troops began to come out, and eventually South Vietnamese troops were doing the bulk of the fighting. And by the spring of 1972, Richard Nixon also had a couple of diplomatic victories, you know, the trip to China and the SALT Treaty with the Soviet Union. So he was doing good in that area as well. He was developing the reputation of a foreign policy president, you know. But nevertheless, he was still vulnerable. He was not a cinch for re-election. So the Democrats went to their convention in Miami and nominated George McGovern, Senator George McGovern, who had one campaign issue, and that was the war in Vietnam. He was the anti-war candidate. He ran against the war. He opposed the war, and that was his issue. And the entire convention was all about the Vietnam War and the opposition to the Vietnam War. That's where all the energy and all of the money, that's where it was in the Democrat Party at that time, the opposition to the Vietnam War. The problem is that by the time the election of 1972 started happening, by the time the fall came around, by the time people went to vote on election day 1972, there was no war in Vietnam. The troops, I mean, we had pulled out most of the combat troops. There were some troops behind, but they were primarily supporting the South Vietnamese. There were some Air Force personnel, and some of those airplanes and B-52s were used to bomb North Vietnam from time to time, particularly the Christmas bombing of 1972. But for the most part, you know, the daily reporting of Americans being killed in Vietnam had pretty much passed away. So by November of 1972, the Democrats were running an anti-war candidate in a country that the war was over. And it was just a mismatch. Also, on top of that, there were some really radical Democrats at that convention in 1972 that forced McGovern to accept a lot of ideas that he probably didn't believe. But anyway, so on election night, the country said, hey, you know, we're going to reelect Nixon, and they did it in large margins. Now, the reason I think that this election of 2020 looks a little bit like that one is because, number one, I do believe that President Trump will be reelected, but at the same time, I don't think he is a cinch to be reelected. I mean, I don't think it's a done deal that he's going to be reelected. He does have some vulnerabilities. So, I mean, it's not like he's going to be reelected without any question. I think he will be, but, you know, he's got some work to do between now and then. And the Democrats, instead of nominating a candidate who can compete with President Trump, let's say, on the economy, on other issues, they're basically focusing exclusively on the left wing of the party, pandering to the party on Medicare for all, health care, you know, free tuition, all of these things that, you know, may or may not be popular in the party. I'm not sure that they really are, but anyway, they're certainly popular in the left-wing primaries. But they're not going to play come election time, and the party keeps moving further and further to the left. You know, you've had people like Bill Maher of HBO, not exactly a Republican, say that, you know, the Democrats have to stop sounding so crazy. And they are sounding crazy. The stuff that we're hearing from the Democrat Party is pretty crazy. You know, even Bill Maher said that if the party is more concerned with a Central American immigrant coming on a caravan or in a caravan, if they're more concerned about him than they are about American workers, well, that's not a good strategy for winning. They're not talking about health care. I mean, any respectable solution. I mean, Medicare for all is not a solution. Nobody is going to buy that. All this stuff about free health care and free tuition and forgiving debts, that kind of stuff is not going to fly in a general election. So the reason I think the two elections are beginning to look alike to me is because, just like the Democrats in 72, the Democrats heading into 2020 are moving further and further from the left to the left, and as a consequence, further and further from the American people. I mean, when you're out there pandering for transgenders, for abortion at any moment of the pregnancy, you know, free health care, forgiving debts and all of that, that's not a solution. That's not going to get you elected, because I think most Americans understand that you cannot do that stuff. And that's why I think 2020 is starting to at least to look like 1972. Now, there's a lot of time left, and this thing could change, and I'm the first one who says that. But I think right now, unless things don't change, the Democrats are doing a great job of reelecting President Trump. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Another big story of the day. This is not a major story, but it's kind of a funny story. It appears that Chris Cuomo was out with his family, and he was confronted. It was nothing physical. I mean, it's certainly nothing like we've seen with some Republican candidates like Sarah Sanders, or not candidates, but Senator Cruz, when he and his wife were confronted in Washington, D.C., or Sarah Sanders recently, where she was denied, I guess, food at a restaurant. But he was approached, I guess, by somebody who was calling him Fredo, or Fredo, of course, or Frito, a reference to the godfather, you know, the younger son of the family. And, of course, Chris Cuomo is the younger son of the Cuomo family. His father was governor of New York and never ran for president, but everybody thought he should. And his brother, Andrew, is the governor of New York right now. And, you know, they call him Fredo. It's not the worst thing you can call somebody. But here's my feeling about this, and I'm very firm about this. I don't think we should be approaching people and provoking people when they're with their family. Now, I'm not a big fan of Chris Cuomo. I think Chris Cuomo, frankly, is not a guy that I watch. I don't waste my time watching him. So, you know, that's just my feeling. I just don't waste my time watching him on TV. But I also don't think it's a good idea to approach people and say, hey, Fredo, you know, and start, in a sense, having fun with them when their family is around. I think there ought to be a privacy moment that we should all have. And so that's my beef here with whoever decided to show up here with Chris Cuomo. Let these people have a night with their families and a time with their families. I think everybody's entitled to that. And that's, again, I don't think this is the worst confrontation that I've seen. In fact, compared to a lot of Republicans, it was really easy. But I don't support these kinds of activities, you know, running into people and, you know, confronting them with their families. I just don't think that's a good idea. And I don't think our side should be doing that. Now, another story that I saw today, very interesting, and I have a post about this coming out on Wednesday, and that is what is happening with the finances of President Trump's reelection. It appears that he is really, you know, putting together quite a campaign chest, if you will. And the interesting part is that 65% of his contributions are under $200. He's getting a tremendous amount of small donations, small business people, small families, whatever. And he's getting a lot of money from those groups. And frankly, I'm not surprised, because I think he's speaking the language of small business people. I think if you're a small businessman out there, you understand that Trump understands business. And I think that's the reason that he's getting that kind of support from small businesses. And as far as families, look, Trump is speaking the language that a lot of Americans are speaking, whether it comes to illegal immigration, whether it comes to trade policies, and so on. So I'm not surprised that he's getting that kind of money. And I think the Democrats ought to be worried about it, because what that translates to, when you're getting that kind of money, those kinds of small donations, what that means is that there's a lot of enthusiasm out there for your candidacy. And those are the people who will turn out to vote. And I think the Democrats ought to be a little concerned about that. We remember on this day in 1995 that Mickey Mantle passed away. He battled cancer there at the end, but he had a graceful ending, absolutely beautiful way to end his life and how he dealt with the cancer. And I thought it was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And on this day in 1899, Alfred Hitchcock was born. And, of course, he went on to make some of the most interesting movies, really, of the last 50 years, maybe the last 100 years. I mean, this guy was an amazing storyteller and movie maker. So we remember Alfred Hitchcock. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.